Ubaid and Abu Ali Dirani, and many other brothers, many of our other beloved colleagues, many of the mujahideen and the fighters, and also a high number of the martyrs, the remains of martyrs' bodies were also exchanged in the prison of Deol in 2004. Now, on that day, the Day of Liberty, or the anniversary of liberty in 2004, we made a promise to those detainees, our brothers who were still detained in Israeli prisons, especially our brother Samir al-Kantad. We promised in 2004 that we would work hard to free the rest of the Lebanese detainees. Now, after that, God enabled us to accomplish this mission, and we had the Ar-Ridwan operation, the prisoner exchange deal, and we uncovered a lot of the conclusions of the last prisoner exchange, and I'm going to speak about the other details of the exchange deal today. But in the beginning, I think that this very, very important anniversary, the anniversary of the prisoner exchange deal of 2004, where many of the detainees and the remnants or the remains of certain martyrs were exchanged. On this occasion, it is appropriate to express our solidarity and to also remind everyone of the cause of the Palestinian, Syrian, Jordanian, Arabs, and especially the prisoners of Al-Quds, the prisoners of the occupied Palestinian territories from 1948, who are witnessing very, very difficult circumstances. The number of those detainees, of all those detainees, Syrian, Palestinian, Jordanian, Arabs, is about 11,000. 11,000 detainees, including a high number of women and children and sick and people who have special health conditions. And this cause must always be in our minds. We must always remember, the whole Ummah must always remember these detainees. We must always behave responsibly towards this issue, whether it be the governments or leaderships or the political parties or the people. We must always remember these detainees. We must always look at this issue as a national issue, a jihadi issue on one hand, and as a humanitarian and moral issue, a very, very high-level humanitarian issue, because concerning those Arab, the detainees, we also are seeing a show of perseverance and challenge. And on the other hand, we are witnessing the very, very difficult circumstances, the sufferings in the Israeli prisons, also the sufferings of the families of those detainees. I would like to express on this occasion, express once again the importance of the detainees, the Palestinian and Arab detainees in Israeli jails. And many people now have almost forgotten this issue. Let me now go back to the operation, the latest prisoner deal where Samir al-Kantar was exchanged and his colleagues as well. Now, we have the issue of Yahya Skaf and the Marty Dalal Mughrabi, these two people. Now, in the prisoner exchange deal in 2004, we insisted that the prisoner exchange deal include the detainee Yahya Skaf. The Israelis alleged that Yahya was martyred with the group which was with Dalal Mughrabi, the Marty Dalal Mughrabi. So then we called for his body. We wanted his body to be returned. If he is a martyr, as the Israelis allege, we called for his body to be turned over to us. Now, at that time, there were many complications about this issue, and it wasn't accomplished. His body was not turned over. In the latest prisoner exchange deal of Samir al-Kantar, we insisted that we want the body of Dalal Mughrabi and also the others who were martyred with her in the operation. And the Israelis allege that including those who are with Dalal Mughrabi is Mr. Yahya Skaf. And actually, in the Ridwan operation, the prisoner exchange deal or the exchange deal with Samir al-Kantar, information and documents were given to us about the martyr operation of Dalal al-Mughrabi, and they also said that these remains, the remains of four martyrs, it's clear that they are very, very old remains. These four remains are for the four martyrs who took part in the martyr operation, Dar al-Mughrabi and Yahya Skaf, and two other martyrs. But the Israelis cannot differentiate which body is for Yahya, which body is for Dar al-Mughrabi. They cannot separate, identify each of the bodies, because when they were buried, there was a lot of complications, and so it was difficult to identify each body, the identity of each body. Now, during the last prisoner exchange deal, we got hold. They turned over the remains of the martyrs as part of the big prisoner exchange deal, and we were able to identify the rest of the martyrs after we gained information. And sometimes we didn't need DNA tests, and sometimes we needed it in certain cases. Now, concerning these remains, we made tests in Lebanese laboratories and didn't reach any conclusions. This is why the issue has been delayed until now. For that reason, we were obliged to be sure of the result, and so we sent samples of the remains of the four martyrs to France. We sent them to the most important laboratories in France, and the DNA tests took all this time because of the years which have passed after the martyrdom of these people. We've worked on this issue in previous prisoner exchange deals. Now, in previous prisoner exchange deals, when we tested bones to get sure of the identity, this testing of bones took 3 or 4 months. So the period is a very, very long time, but it's normal for it to be so long. Now, a few days ago, we received the results of the DNA tests, and the results did not help. We cannot, after the DNA test, we cannot say for sure that any of these four body remains are for Dalal or for Yahya or the other martyrs. And so we believe that these remains are for unknown fighters, unknown martyrs. We were not able to identify the martyrs, who these bodies are for, who these remains are for. So we inform the families of these martyrs, we inform the concerned families concerning Dar al-Mughrabi. Of course, her file proves, after many pictures were taken, after witnesses' testimonies, that this is something known to the family and to the public opinion, that Dalal was martyred actually in a certain operation. So concerning Dalal, it's not about her being martyred or not. She is for sure a martyr. But the question is, are these body remains for Dalal or not? We were not able, we cannot say for sure if these body remains are for Dalal, if one of them is for Dalal al-Mughrabi. So this issue is now in the court of the family of Dalal al-Mughrabi. Concerning Yahya Skaf, we also informed his family, his honorable family, and this family, which was very, very patient and cooperated with us during the latest years. Also, the same result was reached for Yahya. So at this time, from our perspective, from our side, we cannot decide and say 100% with 100% certainty that the body remains are for Yahya Skaf. We cannot say that one of the remains is for Yahya Skaf, and so the assumptions are still open for Yahya Skaf. Is he a live prisoner, a live detainee in Israeli prisons, and does Israel still deny his being alive? Is he missing, and so his destiny is unknown? Is he alive or is he a martyr? Or is he a martyr whose body remains have been lost? Or is he a martyr whose Israel still has his body? Is his body still with Israel? These are all open assumptions. Any one of these possibilities could be true. Now, we believe that the main concerned sides is the family of Yahya Skaf. The family of Yahya Skaf can decide this according to the law, according to legitimacy, which this family depends on, because the issue of a person being alive or dead is not a simple issue. It has issues concerning religion and law, and we in the resistance, we do not consider ourselves to be qualified in assuming someone is alive or dead. And so the family of the detainee Yahya Skaf this decision, whether he's alive or dead, or whether his body is still with the Israelis, or if his body remains, are lost. Of course, the family makes this decision in accordance with the law and with the religious teachings as well. Now, based upon all this, concerning Dalal and Yahya, the picture has become clear for these two people. We do not consider that we have the body remains of those martyrs who fell in the operation, martyr operation of Dalal al-Mughrabi. Now, concerning Mr. Muhammad Farran, we also informed his family previously when the latest prisoner exchange deal was made. We assured his family that the Israelis denied that Muhammad actually is in Israeli custody. They even denied if he was a martyr or his body was with the Israelis. They allege this. This is the Israeli allegation. We cannot agree to this Israeli allegation because the fishing boat which he was in at that time, the fishing boat actually reached the Israelis, and when the fishing boat was returned to the uniform forces, there was the blood of Muhammad Farran on the boat. Blood samples of him were found on the boat, and so we hold Israel responsible for the destiny of Mr. Muhammad Farran. Now, here's a question. Do we consider Muhammad Farran, this issue, do we consider this as a live prisoner? Do we consider him as a missing person of unknown destiny? Do we consider him as a martyr being held by the Israelis, his body is being held by the Israelis? I say the same thing. All of these possibilities are open. We are not the legitimate side, the qualified side, to speak about this. This is also for the family of Muhammad al-Farran to decide, and also the religious and legal experts. Now, in light of all this, the names which we have concerning the previous prisoner exchange deal, I believe that everything has now become clear. Concerning the rest of the file, the rest of the issue, we have lists of a high number of Lebanese and Palestinian martyrs. The Lebanese martyrs were all martyred in Lebanese territories. And we also have documents and pictures, some of them journalist pictures, some of them are private photos that the Israeli soldiers were holding these bodies and transferring them by helicopters or by military vehicles. And these martyrs, they either fell in the hands of the Israeli soldiers after the operations made by the Islamic, by the resistance, or the Israelis found these bodies after that and took these bodies in, held the bodies. Concerning the Palestinian martyrs, many of them were martyred in Lebanon as well, especially in 1982 during the Israeli invasion of Lebanon, and their bodies were also held by the Israelis. Some of them were martyred inside the Palestinian territories, especially in northern Palestine, northern occupied Palestine. Now, what we have, the lists we have, the numbers we have, I cannot say that our numbers are precise, because there might be martyrs which we have not received information about due to the circumstances, the conditions which we witnessed during the last 30 years. But I can say that the number of Lebanese and Palestinian martyrs is almost 350 martyrs. Their bodies are still with the Israelis, or at least their bodies have not reached their families, and their bodies are in territories which are controlled by the Israelis. This is concerning the martyrs. So the issue of the bodies of martyrs is still an open issue. The second issue is the issue of missing persons. Now, the number of missing people is hundreds. And time by time, as time goes by, we get new evidence. The missing people, most of them are Lebanese. The high majority are Lebanese, and some of them are Palestinians. And here I'm speaking about the missing persons who Israel has responsibility for, meaning they were either arrested on Israeli military checkpoints, or the Israeli occupation forces raided their houses and arrested them and they disappeared without a trace, or they were arrested on checkpoints for militants which worked for Israel, such as Saad Haddad militia or others, or these same militias which worked for Israel raided their houses and arrested them and took them in, held them in prisons. And there are witnesses who say that there were detainees in the prisons of certain militias which worked for Israel, and after that we lost a trace of these people. Now we consider that these people are missing persons because many long years have passed on their issue, and Israel takes complete responsibility because these people were kidnapped either by the Israeli army or militants working for Israel on territories which are controlled by the Israeli army. So this is still an open issue which is not ended as well. This file is still open. Of course, the name and the names and numbers still need more revision. We still need to look deeply into the names and the numbers of those missing persons and the martyrs. In this file, also, before I conclude, I would like to call, I'd like to make a responsible call as a nationalist, a moral call to the political authority in Lebanon, to the Lebanese government, especially because we have a national unity government, and for years and years they've been working on rebuilding the country and the state taking its responsibility, the government taking its responsibility. This issue is the responsibility of the government. Of course, we as resistance, we will not back down from our responsibilities. Those are our brothers, those are our loved ones, and we will take our responsibility concerning the bodies of the martyrs, and we know the wishes of the families of the martyrs to get back their bodies, or concerning the missing persons, and their cause represents human sufferings for their families, for their wives, for their sons, daughters, for their families in general. So we will not abandon our responsibilities in this subject. But I, on this anniversary, I would like to call on the Lebanese government, which is responsible, first of all, for this issue, to take its responsibilities. In what mechanism, how, this is its responsibility. I do not decide how and in what mechanism the Lebanese government must act. And we will not abandon our responsibilities, and we are ready to provide any type of assistance and help. Now, let me all now begin with the second main theme, which is the Iranian diplomats, the four Iranian diplomats who were kidnapped. Now, at the beginning, as they say, some people would ask, why are you raising this question now? Why are you raising this issue now? Why didn't you raise it before? Before now, when the last prisoner exchange deal was made, I looked into the file of the four Iranian diplomats. It's very clear that there are very, very sensitive details in the issue of the four Iranian diplomats. And when we welcomed the detainees like Samir Kantar and the bodies of the martyrs, they said, we want to make a national wedding, and we all want to go to the airport, and all the media wants to take part. And so they tried to create a positive atmosphere, an atmosphere of celebrations. And at that time, we considered that opening the file of the four Iranian diplomats, if you want to speak of it as it is, it would lead to a kind of division amongst the Lebanese. It might hurt the celebrations of the Lebanese with themselves. It might hurt Lebanese unity, and a celebration in Lebanon could be transformed into divisions amongst the Lebanese. And you know, when Lebanese factions are against each other, we're in one situation, we go back to another, a situation of confrontation. So when we delayed it, I related this issue to the DNA tests, and I said I'll speak about all these issues when the DNA tests are complete. So for this reason, I of course decided to raise the issue of Iranian diplomats now, because raising it before would have hurt the celebrations, the positive atmosphere during the time where Samir Kantar and his colleagues came back. Now you will see when I discuss this issue, that is a responsible way of speaking about things. I don't want to go into deliberations or arguments. I don't want to score political points against anyone. Now, concerning the four Iranian diplomats, whether it be in the previous prisoner exchange in 2004 or in the latest one in 2008, we reached the same conclusion, or The same conclusions were given to us. In the last prisoner exchange, we have a complete file of Israeli investigations, and the Israelis allege they did these investigations. Now, from my perspective, the Israelis are enemies, so I cannot depend on all what is said by the Israelis. Concerning us, we must confirm anything said by the Israeli side. But in the end, the report is a long one about the investigation concerning the Iranian diplomats. There are, of course, a lot of names which were mentioned. It's a very sensitive issue. Now, the result, which the Israelis insist on, and we cannot say this result is correct or true 100%, and if we want to investigate these results, we need cooperation. The Israelis allege that the four Iranian diplomats were kidnapped by the Lebanese forces group in 1982, and the Israelis allege that they were killed by the Lebanese forces group and were buried in certain places. And the Israeli investigation mentions certain places whereby the diplomats could have been buried. These were the results which were reached by the Israelis. This is the Israeli allegation. Now, concerning us, from our side, I also made contacts with our Iranian brothers at that time. We have evidence which shows that the four Iranian diplomats may still be in the Israeli prisons. There is some evidence which points out to this possibility, and the Israeli denial concerning the holding of these four Iranian diplomats, or concerning Yahya Skef or Mohammad Farran, we cannot depend on what the Israelis say, because we have experience with the Israelis previously. The Israelis have denied the existence of detainees in their prisons for years and years, and after that it was proven that these detainees were actually alive. For example, the five brothers, the Lebanese forces group turned over five brothers to the Israelis. The Lebanese forces group turned over five people to the Israelis. The Israelis denied that they received these five people, and for 5 years we didn't know anything about them. After the 5 years, we knew, after message, certain letters were made, that they were in Israeli prisons, and after that we liberated them in a prisoner exchange deal. So denial and then proof of the opposite of the Israeli allegation has happened before. Previously, Israel has denied things which turn out to be true. Now, there is something which is 100% sure. The Lebanese and the Israelis, and I believe even officials in the Lebanese forces group, and even the Iranians and the Syrians, all of those sides who participated in the security issues in Lebanon, know very well that the Iranian diplomats, the four Iranian diplomats, were under the protection of the interior forces, Lebanese interior forces, and they were kidnapped by the Lebanese forces group. This is something sure. They were kidnapped by the Lebanese forces group, and for a period of time they were alive in prisons of the Lebanese forces group. This is something which we are 100% sure of. Now, after this comes a difficult, complicated part. Did the Lebanese forces group kill them? If they did kill them, where are their bodies? In which place were they buried? Do they really have bodies, or were the bodies buried, or are there remains of bodies? These are questions which are unanswered. Are they still alive in the custody of the Lebanese forces group? This is a weak possibility, but it is a possibility. Did the Lebanese forces group turn them over to the Israelis at that time? You know that the Lebanese forces group always cooperated with the Israelis. This is also a possible assumption. Now, what is required, what helps and contributes, is the position of the Lebanese forces group today. Now, here I don't want to speak to the Lebanese forces group, I want to speak to the Lebanese government as well. These diplomats are Iranian diplomats, diplomats which were recognized in Lebanon, which were under the protection of the forces of the Lebanese Interior Ministry, meaning under the protection of the Lebanese state, and they were kidnapped by the Lebanese forces group, and they were held by the Lebanese forces group. And whoever knows their fate is Lebanese forces. Did the Lebanese forces group kill them or did they turn them over to the Israelis? The Lebanese government is concerned in uncovering this destiny and uncovering the truth, especially because the Lebanese forces group now is part of the Lebanese government. And the Ministry of Justice is under the auspices of the Lebanese forces group, the Lebanese Ministry of Justice. We are ready to give all the evidence which reached us, regardless of whether we approve of the results of the Israeli investigation or not, because part of these results came from the enemy. And so the side which can make this decision or which can put this issue on the right track, the issue of the foreign Iranian diplomats, the appropriate side to put this on the right track is the Lebanese Forces Group. The Lebanese Forces Group must release all the information it has on this case. It must say, when it kidnapped these Iranian diplomats, did it kill them? And if it did, where are their bodies? Did it turn them over to the Israelis? Such information from the Lebanese Forces Group can be a good justification to continue with this issue with the Israelis in any future negotiations. The key and the solution to the case of Iranian diplomats is with the Lebanese Forces Group. And I'd like to remind all those who are concerned with this issue, I'd like to remind them of the humanitarian perspective. There are four Iranian diplomats who have families, who have wives and fathers and mothers and sons and daughters and families and relatives and friends who are suffering ever since 1982. So a clear answer from the Lebanese Forces Group will help us very much. And we are not raising this issue to score political points against the Lebanese Forces Group, which is, of course, headed by Samir Jarjar. Others are looking for excuses to score political points to create divisions. We are raising a humanitarian issue, not for political purposes. We are raising a moral issue, and this is far away from any political gains. Now, that was concerning the last prisoner exchange deal where Samir Kuntan and his colleagues were released. Now, another issue which I'd like to discuss in this press conference is concerning Gaza. Of course, I do not want to speak about the interior, the internal situation in Lebanon, but I don't mind to answer any of your questions related to the situation in Lebanon or the bodies of martyrs or other issues. Of course, we don't have enough time to speak about the internal situation in the speech before the questions. I haven't spoken about the internal situation for a long time, so I won't raise this issue now, internal situation, but you're free to ask questions about the internal situation in Lebanon. Now, concerning Gaza, I would like to speak about this not as an analysis of what happened and the results of what happened, but I would like to remind and stress on the responsibility of certain sides, and I'd like to evaluate what happened. From day one of Gaza, I spoke on many occasions, and here I would like to assure you that the days proved the aims, the real aims of the war. There was an American decision from the Bush administration with international and Arab coordination in order to take advantage of the remaining time of the Bush administration before Obama takes power to change the reality. And this is the term which Livni used. She used changing the facts on the ground. She used this term. I looked at all the aims. It was clear they did not announce any aims. They, of course, tried to benefit from the lessons of the Lebanese war. I saw from Barak in one of his comments, I didn't, many media outlets did not focus on what he said, but I saw this in Hebrew translation. What Barak said, he said, our aim is not to stop the rockets being launched, our aim is not to stop the smuggling of weapons, etc., etc. Of course, he's saying it's not our aim, and he's taking advantage of the lessons of the July 2006 war. First of all, he knows he cannot achieve these aims, whether it be stopping the launching of our rockets or the smuggling of weapons because of the will of a resistance. And second of people, Barak denies that there are aims, because if these aims are not achieved, he'll then say we didn't even specify any aims. And if the aims are achieved, he'll speak about these aims in an arrogant way and say we made these great achievements in this military operation. There was a problem in the statements made by the Israelis to get the real aim. What was the aim, real, true aim, which the Gaza war wanted to achieve? Of course, we heard the term changing the reality or changing the facts of the ground. I believe there was a higher aim, a bigger aim. The bigger aim was to destroy the resistance in the Gaza Strip, toppling the Hamas government, overthrowing Hamas, destroying Hamas, and destroying the rest of the Palestinian resistance factions. This was the bigger goal. The smaller goal was to impose, humiliate the Hamas government, humiliate the Palestinian resistance factions, to force them to agree to the new circumstances of any future settlement. So there was a big aim and a smaller aim, and the war was waged. They put three stages for this war. The first stage was the air raids, and this was a whole complete stage, and they expected that the air raids in a small geographic area like Gaza would destroy the resistance or force the resistance to accept Israeli conditions. But 7 or 8 days of a continuation of the Israeli air raids did not destroy the resistance or topple the resistance. Then we saw the second stage, which was the ground invasion in the open areas. And you know, in Gaza, there are no valleys or mountains like in South Lebanon. This was to surround the villages in Gaza and to perform limited ground invasions, ground operations. The third main stage was to go deep into the Palestinian villages. The second stage also was not successful for Israel. Israel was not able to destroy the resistance or force the resistance to surrender to Israeli conditions. And so we must here salute the solidarity, the historic perseverance of the resistance in Gaza, and also the stance of the historic stance of the people of Gaza. This solidarity, this support, this heroic stance disrupted the first stage from achieving its aims and prevented Israel from achieving its aims in the second stage. And it gave a picture that the resistance is ready to fight until the last drop of blood. And time was running out. And we saw popular protests in the whole world, Arab, Islamic, and the whole world in general. And the Israelis knew that their forces entering deep into Gaza would lead to them losing a lot of soldiers, would lead to a lot of Israeli soldiers being killed. And this is what made the Israelis announce a unilateral end to the military campaign without achieving any of their announced aims or any of their secret aims. Now, the next step was we got back the reputation of the Israeli army of being a strong army, killing women and children and destroying houses. Does this give the Israeli army a better reputation? They did the same thing in Lebanon. Even what happened in the last few days, the resistance confronted certain attempts of the Israelis to enter into Gaza, and we saw losses. Israelis lost some soldiers, and rockets were launched in Gaza even in the last few days after the ceasefire. Of course, I'm not encouraging or preventing launching rockets or not. This is of the Palestinians' concern. But what I want to say is that Israelis today are saying that what they alleged of giving a better reputation to the Israeli army, this also has now been heard after the Palestinians launched rockets. It's similar to what happened after the July 2006 war in Lebanon, where 11 soldiers were killed, 11 Israeli soldiers were killed. What happened in Gaza after a deep study, without overdoing it, what happened in Gaza is a failure for the Israelis in achieving any of their aims, a military failure and a political failure as well. And today we heard some voices in the Vinograd Committee who said that the results which we reached in the Gaza war are very similar to the results which we reached in the July 2006 war with Lebanon. And I think these voices will increase as time goes by, because during the military campaign, of course, the media was not allowed to cover. Many soldiers were not able to speak about what was going on the battlefield. So many facts about what happened in Gaza have not been uncovered until now. And so we as a resistance, we consider that what happened in Gaza is a victory for the Palestinian resistance and a big failure for the Israeli military campaign and a failure for all those who supported this military campaign. But the daily campaigns, the war has stopped in general. The big war has stopped on Gaza, but the war which we're witnessing before the big military campaign has not stopped. And this is what I want to point to now. I do not want to begin with arguments, and I'd like to tell you, whoever does not confess to the victory of the resistance in Lebanon for the same reasons will not confess to the victory of a resistance in Palestine, will not confess that the Palestinians achieve a victory in Palestine. Whoever does not recognize that the resistance in Lebanon achieved victory in 2006, and the Israelis, by the way, themselves confess that the Lebanese resistance defeated them in Lebanon, and those same people will also not confess that the Palestinian resistance was successful in Gaza. And Israel, for certain election purposes, will not say that they lost in the war on Gaza. For election purposes, I myself will not try and convince certain people of a victory in Gaza. Certain sides have made the decisions. Israel is victorious even if it's defeated, and the resistance is defeated even if it's victorious. And the tactical objective discussion and the institutions, the centers of study, will not prove anything, because we have decisions taken previously, meaning certain sides will not recognize any victory for the resistance, regardless of whatever happens on the battlefield. Another point which I want to mention is that now, as the siege continues on Gaza, and I'd like to tell the Arab and Islamic and all the forces, all the world which stood side by side with the people of Gaza, and I was one of those people who called for helping Gaza be victorious before the military campaign. I called for the lifting of the siege before the Israeli military campaign. This siege is still continuing on all border crossings at the time where we have very, very difficult humanitarian sufferings, more difficult than they were before the Israeli military campaign. So today, there are certain people who are trying to impose Israeli conditions on the resistance factions, especially on the Hamas leadership. They are doing this because they were incapable of imposing these conditions during the Israeli military campaign. They are trying to take advantage of the needs of a resistance and the needs of a people, needs concerning rebuilding and bringing about a better humanitarian situation, to impose these conditions. They're taking advantage of the humanitarian needs in Gaza, the rebuilding needs in Gaza, to impose Israeli conditions. Now, concerning rebuilding and also the humanitarian situation, relating this to political issues or Palestinian reconciliation or a ceasefire with Israel or a settlement, this is blackmail. This is political, immoral blackmail, insulting blackmail, and nobody can accept this, and it must be condemned. Here I'd like to speak to everyone. We must all cooperate to give all the necessary assistance to the people of Gaza so they can rebuild Gaza, and so Gaza can live in a better humanitarian situation. This should be done without any preconditions, without any previous political preconditions. This is the appropriate humanitarian moral stance. If we are Arabs, this is the appropriate Arab stance. If we are Muslims, this is the appropriate Muslim stance. Anything else is blackmail and humiliation, and it is like serving the enemy, and it is an attempt to try and achieve the goals of a military campaign, and anyone who does this, tries to impose preconditions, is a partner in the campaign by Israel. So today the Ummah, from the political media or from the popular perspective, the Ummah must not now feel that the war has stopped. The war is continuing, but in a different form. And so we must take steps on all levels to protect the political leadership, the resistance factions, and to put pressure so that the border crossings are opened and the siege is lifted on Gaza, and also to help the Palestinians in Gaza so that they can rebuild their houses and rebuild what was destroyed without previous political peak, without political preconditions, sorry, whether it be by giving assistance to the government in Gaza or to the Palestinian resistance factions or to the Palestinian people directly or by the countries or the institutions being there themselves directly in Gaza, although there are some who may prevent the assistance from entering into Gaza. And this is still continuing now. Certain sides are preventing the assistance from reaching Gaza. And what we heard about open Rafah, about open border crossing, sorry, here or there, this is a lie. This is a lie. Nobody has opened any border crossings until now. And I'd like to conclude by saying, and it's my duty to say, that we condemn all the comments which were made, especially by some European officials. These officials, one of them came to Gaza, actually. One of these European officials came to Gaza and witnessed with his own eyes the destruction in Gaza, and he witnessed these schools in UNRWA, which were destroyed, and where the children, women and children were killed. Then he stands without condemning Israel, who killed day and night more than 1,300 Palestinians, half of them women and children. But he disregarded this and condemned Hamas and accused Hamas of being a terrorist movement because it launched rockets which killed or injured a small number of Israeli settlers. He condemned Hamas because, in his perspective, Hamas kills what he calls Israeli citizens, but he did not have the courage, and he was not speaking at Tel Aviv, by the way, he was speaking in Gaza. He did not have the courage to condemn Israel or accuse Israel of committing war crimes or accuse Israel of being a terrorist country. And this gives us a clear vision, my dear brothers and sisters, my dear viewers, this gives us a clear vision of the preemptive American-Israeli-European stance of supporting Israel and adopting Israel's policies even when it commits the most ugly crimes. These crimes which are being committed under the cameras, under the eyes of the whole world. We condemn such comments, and we believe that Hamas and Jihad and the Palestinian resistance factions in Gaza and in Palestine are resistance movements, honorable resistance movements, which practice Jihad, national patriotic movements, whose ideology is based on the will of the people, and these factions represent the historical rights of the people. And such comments by the Europeans cannot affect the will of resistance, whether it be in Lebanon or in Palestine. Now, I'll give the floor to your questions. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, greetings to you. Maryam Al-Bassam from New TV. First of all, not a question, but a point I'd like to raise or highlight. As they say, it's very clear that you, in this press conference, you have spoken about a new file to confront Israel, which is the file of the continuation of the detainees. Now, after the confrontation, after the problems with Israel were just about the Shaba farms, many people said this is a weak excuse to continue with this way with Israel. Now we have another reason to continue with this confrontation with Israel, which is the continuation of the prisoner file. But you actually sworn against the assassination of Imad Mughniyeh. 1 year has passed after his martyrdom. What's happened concerning this? Do we have any new information concerning the Syrian investigation into the assassination of Mughniyeh, which has led to your hesitation? Some have said that you use your weapons inside Lebanon more than you used it against the enemy in the appropriate way. And in the same context, Gaza, of course, always waited for you to help them to achieve victory. But Gaza only witnessed speeches from you. And even when the rockets were launched from South Lebanon to Israel, you told the Minister of Information that Hezbollah is not behind this. So has Hezbollah become a political party, and has the international equation been able to extinguish the fire of Hezbollah? And are you fearful of paying the price? Do you now know? Now, allow me, please, of course, allow me to raise this question. I hope you'll accept these questions. It's not very often when you allow us to ask questions, so I hope you can accept this question. Yes. First of all, you're right to make such a conclusion. Do we have a new file, a new issue concerning the detainees? On the first level, this is not my concern. It's not in my court. This is for the family of Yahya Skaf and Muhammad Farran. It's there. They make the decision. If they consider them martyrs, we can assume that there are no more martyrs with the Israelis. If they consider them martyrs, we will, of course, put them on the list of the martyrs. If they consider them missing persons, we'll put them on the list of missing persons. If they consider them detainees, it means it's our responsibility to continue with the issue as prisoners. But as I said, this is for the families to decide, and the law decides this issue concerning the detainees being alive or dead. And you know, Muslims or Christians in Lebanon, there are certain mechanisms which are dependent on. Certain people say a person is dead or not, but this is a very, very difficult issue to decide. It's not simple. So if they consider them as alive, we must consider that there are still live prisoners with the Israelis, and we must follow up the issue. I agree with you on your evaluation, but as I said, this decision is for the families. Now, concerning avenge or getting revenge for Imad Mughni, who was assassinated last February 2008, we always remember this, and it's always an open issue. The Israelis are always making their preparations. You are seeing the precautionary measures being taken by the Israelis in all parts of the world. But it's not in our interest to speak about the issue of revenge or avenging the death or martyrdom of Imad Mughni. And I'd like to speak about the term avenge or revenge to respond to the assassination of Imad Mughni, to teach the killers a lesson and to protect the lives of the rest of our people is something necessary. The place and time and the circumstances and what happened and what didn't happen and the allegations of the Israelis, of course, for example, yesterday and today we heard some issues being mentioned. Don't expect any comments from us concerning such subjects, a response to Imad Mughni. Don't expect us to comment on a response to the assassination of Imad Mughni. Now, concerning the investigation into the martyrdom of Imad Mughni, the investigation has reached the conclusions which hold Israel and the Israeli Mossad responsibility for the assassination of Imad Mughni. But until now, we have not uncovered the details of this investigation because the investigation is ongoing. So we cannot speak about details at the time where the investigation is continuing because this could disrupt the investigation. For this reason, there have been no official announcements from Syria about the results of the investigation. But on my side, according to my information, I can assure you 100% that the investigation has proven that the Israeli Mossad did assassinate Imad Mughni. Now, concerning Gaza, this issue was also raised during the war. Why didn't Hezbollah intervene militarily, for example? The question is, was it appropriate? Should we? We, of course, expressed our solidarity in the media. Our people expressed their solidarity. Maybe there are other sides, other ways in which we supported the people of Gaza. I don't have to speak in detail about them. But the question is concerning the front in Lebanon. Should we have opened a war front in Lebanon? If we should have done this, Where should this decision have been made? Where is the Lebanese will concerning such a step? These are many issues which are related to the way we behave during the military campaign on Gaza. And here I don't think I'm in a position to defend myself. We are still a resistance which is present to defend Lebanon and to confront the enemy at the times where we should. And we never have exited the circle of confrontation with Israel. But you raise the question, and so some people in the Arab world and some people condemned the launching of rockets from southern Lebanon and said that though these rockets shouldn't have been launched. And on the other hand, they said that all we did for Gaza is to make speeches. So they confused us. What do they want? Do they want us to help militarily or do they want us to stay away? It's very clear that they have a negative attitude. According to our position, what we did in Lebanon is the least possible we could have done. It's the duty. What we did was our duty concerning the rockets which were launched from South Lebanon to Israel or to the Palestinian territories. We did not call anyone. We did not call anyone in the Lebanese government, and we did not make a statement on this. The Lebanese Prime Minister called the Hezbollah political advisor and asked him, do you have anything to do with the rockets which were launched? He said, we don't have anything to do with this, and we don't have any information. This was all what was said by the Hezbollah political advisor. Of course, the Lebanese Information Minister said that Hezbollah told us they were involved. We did not actually call the Lebanese Information Minister. We, regardless of whether we approve of the launching of rockets or not, regardless of this, our behavior was a very cautious behavior during the military campaign on Gaza so that nobody would read between the lines, so nobody could use this issue for certain purposes. The terms which were used by the Lebanese Minister of Information were his own terms and his own words. What we said, we have no information, we don't know who did it, and we are not border guards to take responsibility and find out what happened. The next question. First of all, good evening, Sayyid Hassan Rasulullah, Bassam Al-Kontar from Al-Akhbar newspaper. I have two parts in my question. The first part is not journalist related. It's a very important occasion. In the name of me, in the name of all the detainees, we'd like to thank you in the name of all the detainees who were freed from Israeli prisons, and we stress and highlight our confidence in you in the name of all the detainees who are still, or the families who are still waiting for the destiny of their people, of their loved ones. But in the name of all of us, I say we do not depend on the governments, even if we have a national unity government. We depend on their resistance to free or to uncover the destiny of the detainees or bodies of the martyrs. Concerning Gaza now, of course, we found that Gilad Shalit, the Israeli soldier, was injured. The second issue is concerning the Egyptian collaboration with Israel. And so Egypt now cannot take part in negotiations with the freeing of Gilad Shalit. Do you advise the Hamas to raise a prisoner exchange deal with Gilad Shalit? And do you advise them to change the Egyptian mediator and replace him with a European or Turkish media to complete this issue? Because I think thousands of Palestinian families are waiting for their loved ones, especially after the blood which was shed in Gaza. Yes, concerning Shalit, I don't have any information at all. I don't have any information about Gilad Shalit, but concerning the negotiation tactics, I leave this for Hamas. The difference between us and Hamas is that Gilad Shalit is alive. This is what we know. There is some information which points out that he was injured, so the Israelis are negotiating on a live prisoner. Shalit is alive. But concerning us, the two Israeli soldiers, they didn't know if they were alive or dead. In the end, it turned out they were dead. But of course, Shalit is alive. And it's difficult. The Palestinians' expectations for a prisoner exchange deal is high. For us, the number of Lebanese detainees was limited. We were striving to see how many non-Lebanese prisoners could be freed. But the problem with the Palestinians is there's a very, very high number of Palestinian prisoners or detainees. So they decide the negotiation tactic. Concerning replacing Egypt as a mediator, I don't know details about the negotiations, but according to my information, even if Hamas wants to look for another mediator. The Israelis won't accept anyone except for the Egyptians for any prison exchange deal. This is my point of view. The next question, please. Yes, Hussein Ayyub from As-Safir newspaper. Do you believe that in light of the war on Gaza, do you believe that Israel is capable of waging a war against Lebanon in the near future, first of all? And second of all, your speech to Egypt, or what you said to Egypt, specifically to the people in Egypt, do you believe that this was an appropriate language to use, especially because some friends of Hezbollah and some of your friends said that you should have just called for opening the Rafah border crossing without using this language towards the Egyptian people? The second issue concerning the speech of the King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia in Kuwait, how do you evaluate this speech, and why weren't the decisions made in Kuwait, why weren't they implemented here in Lebanon? Why didn't they affect what happened in Lebanon, or why didn't they affect the Saudi rhetoric? Yes, concerning the war against the enemy's nature is to launch these wars. This enemy is bloodthirsty. During 60 years in the Arab world, we've witnessed the nature of this enemy. Nobody can say, is Lebanon now secure from any Israeli military campaign? But will Israel go ahead and wage a war or not? I cannot deny, nor can I assure you, that Israel will take such a step. Israel has a hostile nature, and possibilities are open at all times. Many say the most important thing is not to give Israel an excuse to go and wage a war, but Israel can invent excuses. When it invaded Lebanon in 1982, who gave it an excuse? There was a ceasefire in Lebanon, but with the excuse that there are certain unknown people who tried to assassinate the Israeli ambassador in Britain, I believe, because of this excuse, they went ahead and invaded Lebanon and Beirut. So Israel waging a war in Lebanon, this is chance of this possibility is always open. This is always possible, but there are difficulties for Israel to go ahead with such an act, because after the experiences in Gaza and in July 2006 war, a war will not be easy and will cost Israel a lot. And this is the equation we must focus on. Now, if anyone imagines that a war could be waged, of course, I do not want to speak about the strategy of defense. Many people commented on this. If anyone can wage a war without citizens falling, let them mention to me any war from the day of the Prophet Adam until now, any war where citizens have not fell. This is a war, especially when the enemy has these weapons. Of course citizens will be killed. This is something normal. And the Israelis in the Grapes of Wrath operation 1996 and in July 2006 war and in the war on Gaza, the Israelis killed civilians deliberately, not by mistake, deliberately, to hurt the will of the resistance, of the leadership of resistance, and to make the people turn against the resistance. So citizens will always be in danger. This is war, and in wars we lose civilians. We lose civilians and we lose military. But the equation is to show the enemy the following balance of power, balance of fear. The Israelis say, we made a balance. But who denies the Israelis have huge capabilities of destruction? We never denied this. Our people in Palestine, do they deny this? Nobody denies Israel has ability to destroy. This is not new, but the new issue now is that we are saying, I also have created the balance of fear, a balance of power. So any war with us will cost you a lot, will cost your entity, your people, and your army a lot. Here I'm speaking to the Israelis. Will cost you a lot. This balance in power is what could prevent the Israelis or lessen the possibility for an Israeli war. But this is always possible. An Israeli war in Lebanon is always possible, as I said. Concerning Egypt, with all due respect to the points of view of my brothers, you know, I'm not one of those people who speaks in an arrogant way. After the July 2006 war, after we achieved this very, very big victory, Maryam al-Bassam asked me a question. I could have run away from this question and said, no, this has nothing to do with the abduction of the two Israeli soldiers. And I said this, but because I am honest, and I said one sentence which until now people still remember. I said one sentence at that time. I believe I said that if I knew that Israel waged a war just because of these two soldiers, I wouldn't have abducted them. This is what every people just focus on. They don't focus on others, some. Now, with all due respect to all the journalists and reporters who considered my position towards Egypt is wrong, I say my position towards Egypt was right 100%. And I'd like to tell you now, I condemn the Egyptian regime, because the Egyptian regime is still closing the Rafah border crossing, not allowing anything to enter Gaza. I condemn this Egyptian regime because it's lying to the Arab and Islamic Ummah. The Egyptian regime is saying it's opened the border crossing. This is not true. It should be open because Gaza needs medical assistance. Today, an Iranian ship will arrive to Lebanese shores. Iranian ship which is carrying medical assistance. Why? Because the Egyptians refused this Iranian ship to go to Egyptian shores. So, in the war and even after the war, no, the Egyptian regime is a partner in the isolation of Gaza. Of course, the Egyptians are a mediator, but is it a noble mediator? Is Egypt a noble mediator? I'm doubtful. I know the Egyptians are trying to put pressure on the Palestinians and impose Israeli conditions. So I find it very strange that some people call on us to open a war front, but at the same time do not allow us or do not accept us to accuse or criticize Egypt. No, I did criticize Egypt, and I'm still going to criticize Egypt. And whoever believes this is wrong, that's his problem. Everyone has the right to accuse me or accuse my statements, but I believe what's happened in Gaza, the Rafah border crossing, is an issue of destiny for the lives of people in Gaza. So closing the Rafah border crossing is one of the biggest crimes in history, which was committed and is still being committed. And don't ask me anymore, please. Now, concerning the Kuwait summit, we support any Arab reconciliation, SS, MS, whatever you may call it. SS, of course, stands for Syria, Saudi Arabia. Any coordination, any cooperation, we support this without any preconditions. And we consider that this is in the interest of our people, of the region. This is one of the reasons behind the perseverance, the victory. So we support Arab reconciliation, and we don't look at this from the angle of political tactics inside Lebanon. The other night, when King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia and Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, when they shook hands with each other, some people in Lebanon were upset from this. Some people didn't react very positively to this. But we consider that any Arab reconciliation, any reconciliation between the Arab governments is in the interests of all of us. Now, concerning the speech by King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, any positive language, we support it without any hesitation. But unfortunately, the words which are spoken in the speech, when it came to the end statement in the Kuwait summit, we did not see this speech mentioned in the end statement. We did not see the language used in the Qatari summit or in the Kuwait summit in the closing declaration of the Arab summit which was held in Kuwait. And this is unfortunate. But anyway, we must welcome any positive atmosphere in Arab relations. We must help in promoting any reconciliation. Another question, Silvana Bashir from Arabic BBC television. My question is concerning the national dialogue about the strategy of defensive Lebanon. There are some who say that you are serious in reaching a common view with the rest of the Lebanese parties concerning the strategy of defense. On the other hand, there are certain groups who believe that the national dialogue sessions are to lose time, and you have made the decision concerning the strategy of defense after you called for depending on the strategy of Hezbollah, meaning the strategy of resistance. What do you say? Of course, If we had made the decision, if we considered that the file has been closed, this means there wouldn't have been any need for any more sessions. I said in the speech of the 10th of Ashura that the experience of July 2006 and Gaza should, I used both terms, should put an end to this. These are facts of the ground. If you want to depend on facts and on reality, our strategic perspective must be over, must be decided, but we are still discussing it. It is not a closed file. For this reason, we are still taking part in the table of dialogue, in the national dialogue sessions. I believe this dialogue will continue. Of course, the national dialogue is serving the country by bringing together factions, and this is serving the stability of Lebanon. This is one of the results. This is not the aim of the national dialogue, but one of the results of the national dialogue sessions is a more stable atmosphere amongst different factions. And I stress on this of the positive atmosphere between the factions, especially in light of the elections in June. We have elections in June in Lebanon, and using the sectarian rhetoric is also very bad and very dangerous. And this could have a more dangerous impact than using money in the elections. Of course, in the national dialogue, we are still open to the opinions of all other factions, and we discuss any opinions which are raised, but we still stress that the table of dialogue must bring together other factions, more factions who are not taking part in these sessions now. These factions must take part in the future. Maryam Saleh from Press TV. My question is concerning the new American President Barack Obama. Of course, there is not a very big difference. Barack Obama said he's ready to listen to others, as he said. Are you ready to send your point of view, maybe in an indirect way, by Turkey, for example, without using hostile language to America? Are you ready to send messages to President Obama, the American President Obama? And some say if there is a comprehensive settlement with Iran, Syria, and Qatar, these countries might abandon the resistance. What will the perspective of Hezbollah be? What will the reaction of Hezbollah be if such a settlement actually happens? Now, of course, we hear a lot. Some people are trying to read positively what is being said, but the behavior of the new American administration concerning Israel is behavior which shows complete support to Israel. Until now, concerning Israel, I haven't seen any difference between the two administrations, Bush and Obama, concerning Israel. Now, concerning other issues, there might be differences. Until now, we've heard speeches only. Let's see the action. Now, we will send our opinions in an indirect way. Of course, we are already sending our point of view in an indirect way. We do not need Turkey. In the July 2006 war, Lebanese officials met with American officials and American envoys. We did not meet because we have a certain position or reservations towards such steps, but we do not need to hold indirect talks with anyone via Turkish mediation or via mediation with anyone else. Maybe Hamas would be obliged to, but not us. We have our opinions, and the Lebanese officials can send the messages of Hezbollah to the American leadership. And we also raise our opinions in the media. We do not have anything to hide. We might not need any channels of discussions. But if we need to send messages to the Obama administration, we'll send them by Lebanese channels, I believe. Concerning fear from abandoning the resistance. First of all, the resistance, whether it be in Palestine or in Lebanon, they are serving righteousness, a right cause. Whoever supports us, we thank them, and whoever abandons us might not be behaving in the appropriate way, but that's their business. However, this will not affect the determination of the resistance and will not affect the right of the resistance. But I believe that such questions are too preemptive. Not your question, but this evaluation, this assumed evaluation, is too early to assume that we're going towards a settlement and that the so-called resistive countries or the resistive countries, sorry, which support the resistance will abandon us, and let's see what we'll do with ourselves. I think it's too early to raise such a scenario, and I believe this won't even happen, but let's just say it's too early. Next question. Qasid Dughman from NBN. First of all, allow me to congratulate you for the victory which the resistance achieved in Gaza, because this means a lot to you, means a lot to the freedom lovers in the world and in Lebanon. Today, of course, you made a call to the Lebanese government and the Lebanese forces group so that they could react positively with the missing persons issue, and you also called on the Lebanese government to take part in the issue of the bodies of the martyrs and the detainees. Does this mean if the Lebanese government does not answer your call, and you said that you are ready to provide assistance, now if the Lebanese government does not react positively to this call, does this mean that we will not see a new July 2006 war, especially because you said we are people who do not leave our detainees or the bodies of our martyrs? And my second question is, yesterday the Egyptian Foreign Minister Ahmed Abul Ghait criticized Hezbollah and accused Hezbollah of trying to light up a new war in the Middle East, Hezbollah, Hamas and Iran. He accused these three sides. From how long will this continue, these accusations between Hezbollah and Egypt, especially after the reconciliation, the so-called Arab reconciliation we saw in Kuwait? Now, concerning the detainees. Now, if we do open this issue of the detainees, this does not mean we're going to go to a war if we keep the file of detainees open. I said this before. Of course, after that, all of the investigations were made in Vinograd. All our group, many groups, said that the July 2006 war had nothing to do with the two Israeli soldiers which Hezbollah abducted. The Israeli war on Lebanon in July 2006 was decided before. They had decided that the war would take place in, I believe, August or September. But thank God, or it's our luck, whatever you want to call it, from God, luck, whatever you want to call it, the resistance abducted the two Israeli soldiers in July 2006. This made the Israelis behave hastily and go ahead and wage the war in July, because they had decided to wage a war in August or September. They were planning to wage a war in August and September, surprisingly, without any preemptive clues, without any preemptive information. They were planning to surprise us. So luckily, we abducted these two Israeli soldiers, and they used this as an excuse to wage a war which was decided to be waged beforehand, but in a later time. So it was lucky that it was waged in July 2006, because they were planning to surprise us in August or September. You notice, of course, in the July 2006 war, they spoke about everything except about the two Israeli soldiers. Even in the first few days of the war, they spoke about the two Israeli soldiers. After that, they did not speak about it. They spoke about the results of the war. So it's not necessary that, of course, freeing any more detainees means a new Israeli war, because Israelis did not wage a war in July 2006 because of the two Israeli soldiers. Concerning the Egyptians, there's a very, very big confrontation in the region. We have one camp, which is resistance camp in Lebanon, in Palestine, for example, and we have another camp which wants to put an end to this whole situation. Of course, we'll have arguments between these two sides. But by the way, we in July 2006, you tell me that those who collaborated with the Israelis against the Palestinians did not collaborate against us. Of course, they collaborated against us. But because we were killed and we were fighting in July 2006, we don't want to enter into arguments with anyone inside Lebanon or outside. And those who insulted us inside Lebanon and outside were a lot. Accusations of being spies and working for Iran and Syria and being tools, all of this. Many accusations were made against us. inside Lebanon and outside during the July 2006 war. But at that time, because we were fighting, we made the decision of not making any comments. And the same happened for the Palestinians, Palestinian resistance. Some people say, they're attacking, you're not attacking. We in July 2006, they don't respond. They have their own situation, as in July 2006. But today, I'm not the one who's being bombed directly in Gaza. I'm in Lebanon. So for that reason, I can now speak towards the collaboration against the Palestinians. Of course, there is one side which insists that the Lebanese resistance must surrender, the Palestinian resistance must surrender. Now, when someone comes and proposes to the Palestinians and says a permanent ceasefire, or if not permanent, 10 or 15 years, and also you must promise and commit yourselves not to smuggle weapons to Gaza after the war, of course, and you must make a reconciliation based upon the following conditions, and you must go towards a settlement to the Israelis. What does that mean? That means surrender. So if the Palestinians cannot raise their voice as the Palestinian resistance, I can raise their voice. I am the brother of a Palestinian resistance. So these arguments between two different groups in the Arab Islamic world is normal, because the current conflict is not a regional conflict, it's a conflict of a cause. One side wants to protect the cause, one side wants to destroy the cause, very clearly. The last question, if you please, Muhammad Qazan, Al Marar TV. How do you view the latest comments made by the MP Saad Al Hariri? Is it for political purposes, or is he trying to blow the reconciliation which happened between you and him in order, or because of Iran? He spoke about Iran, he criticized Iran. So is he trying to blow away the reconciliation which happened, which brought you and Saad al-Hariri together? And what do you think about the money which is for the rebuilding of the south, which still has not been given to the inhabitants of the south to rebuild their homes, which were destroyed in South Lebanon? I'd like to apologize to everyone. This is the last question, because we've taken a very long time. Now, concerning the comments which were made, I, of course, I expressed my reservations towards the comments of Saad al-Hariri. I said this is not the atmosphere which we witnessed during the meeting which brought me and Saad al-Hariri together, but I call for a continuation of the atmosphere of reconciliation, of the calm atmosphere. This is in the interest of all sides. So a calm situation in Lebanon is for the interest of everyone. March 8 and March 14, all groups can raise their voices, all groups can use harsh dialogue. Some groups might have better rhetorical language than others. Everyone can write. This is normal. But a calm situation is in national interest, and I call for calm rhetoric. Now, it was said on the table of national dialogue that you attacked the Egyptian regime. But what's the Egyptian regime got to do with the internal situation in Lebanon? Of course, after we agreed on reconciliation in Lebanon, every day, March 14, verbally attacks Syria and Iran, sorry. And so I call for continuing of the calm situation for electoral purposes. We can all speak political issues, we can all raise proposals, we can all raise agendas without any of us resorting to accusing the other or to speaking in a sectarian way. Concerning the last part of your question, of course, our position is in support of the Parliament Speaker Nabih Birri. The Committee of South Lebanon still has a job to do. Of course, before July 2006, they agreed that the South Lebanese Committee would be dissolved. This has not happened until now. After that, the July 2006 war occurred, and we saw the issue of the compensation for those who lost their homes in South Lebanon. This issue sprung up. So when we have a committee for the government, a committee which is part of a government, the government must give this committee money. Now, when we speak about the committee of South Lebanon, we are open to such a discussion. This government exists, it's a national unity government, and all factions are part of this government. So go ahead. We have the South Lebanon committee, we have the rebuilding committee. These committees, these funds were established on the sidelines of the ministries. We can speak about them, and we call for reforms, financial reforms, administrative reforms. We have our position, and we call for cancelling out these funds and putting responsibility in the ministries and putting together another ministry which is assigned with the task of rebuilding and providing compensation. So we open to reforms. But in light of the current situation, at a time where we have a crisis of rebuilding and compensation, a lot of files are still open, so we cannot cancel out the committee of South Lebanon. And I'd like to add to this that sometimes people view that there is a psychological, cultural issue, of course, concerning South Lebanon. They always cancel out issues concerning South Lebanon, but they focus on other issues. And they sometimes try to cancel out the annual anniversary of the Liberation Day. I also speak about this, so I must say that we need to focus on all of these issues, and we are ready for reforms, administrative reforms. Now, concerning the detainees who were freed, they have problems, the families of Amatis have problems, everything related to the South, their resistance, their rebuilding, the detainees, all of this, we see that there is some kind of ignorance from the state, Lebanese state, towards these issues. Now, someday, if they continue with this, this whole subject will sink. So the people of the South must not get this view that they're being ignored. And what I call for is to allow the Committee of South Lebanon, in accordance with the legal norms, to perform their duties and to continue with the files such as the compensation for the July 2006 war, and to discuss the Committee of South Lebanon as part of a complete administrative reforms. And we support cancelling out all the funds which were established on the sidelines of ministries, and thank you very much.